The first big date on the 49ers offseason calendar takes place on February 22nd when Brock Purdy undergoes elbow surgery in Dallas. The type of surgery will give the 49ers a clear picture of his offseason and the recovery time that awaits Purdy as he enters his second NFL season. The 49ers offseason program will provide Trey Lance with an opportunity to work on his game and make strides in his quest to hold on to the starting job he held entering the 2022 season. Greg Cosell of NFL Films joins us to discuss the 49ers quarterbacks and break down Kyle Shanahan's play call on the play in which Purdy sustained his injury. Jennifer Lee Chan and I will look ahead to some of the decisions the 49ers must make as NFL free agency fast approaches. What can be expected from Jimmy Garoppolo, Mike McGlinchey, Jimmy Ward, Emmanuel Mosley, and others? All that and more coming up on 49ers Talk right now.
Welcome to another edition of 49ers Talk on NBCSportsBayArea.com. Introducing your host, Matt Maiocco.
This is 49ers Talk, brought to you by Big O Tires. Matt, Jennifer, your old friends. And the offseason has started for the team, not
officially.
For us, officially. Yeah. Let's see, anything we need to touch on right away? Maybe some coaching stuff. This is funny. I saw that Clint Kubiak was interviewing for the Houston Texans job.
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, that's interesting, because why would the 49ers give him permission to interview for a non-coordinator job?
Mm-hmm.
And then I realized, hold it. No, the 49ers have Clay Kubiak, not Clint Kubiak, but now they have both Clay and Clint.
Yes, both of them, the brothers.
The KL brothers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting how there's so many different families in the NFL and the coaching staff. Like, you look at the LaFleurs, obviously the Kubiaks, lots of course, nepotism between fathers and sons as well. I mean, it's a family affair.
And I mean, Kyle Shanahan's first real job came from Gary Kubiak, who left Mike Shanahan's staff with the Broncos to become the head coach of the Texans. And that's where Kyle kind of learned, that was his first coordinator's job with the Texans. And then years later, you know, Clay was the quarterback's coach, or assistant quarterback's coach, this last year under Brian Griese. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Clay Kubiak was given a lot of credit for helping find Brock Purdy.
Mm-hmm.
But when the 49ers knew that they wanted a quarterback late in the draft or as an undrafted rookie, they, you know, the scouting department went through their process, and then Brian Griese and Clay Kubiak went through their process, and the choice was Brock Purdy.
And Brock Purdy credits both Brian Griese and Kubiak to helping him get to where he needed to be so that he was successful. I mean, anytime you ask Brock Purdy about, you know, how he was able to succeed in his first year as well as he did in the NFL, he gives those guys credit. And, you know, also Brock Purdy, just such a professional, even at his young age, always giving credit to everybody else and not taking any himself. He's just, I don't know, just one of those respectful kind of old soul players at 23.
Yeah. A lot like me, a lot like a young Matt Maiocco.
Yes. I didn't know you then though. So
yeah,
you know, I'll just have to take your word for it.
Yeah. You can't doubt me. Well, I guess you could. Yeah,
I couldn't doubt you, but yeah, I can't argue with you about it.
Yeah. So anyway, Clint Kubiak is now the passing game coordinator for the 49ers. He was the quarterback's coach of the Denver Broncos last year, also the passing game coordinator. And so he joins the 49ers staff, replacing Bobby Slowick, who became the offensive coordinator of the Houston Texans. And I know, you know, I'm still kind of throwing it out there. I haven't heard definitively if Brian Griese will be back with the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
You know, typically when a guy such as Brian Griese, you know, enters the coaching realm, it's a whole new lifestyle. And I know he went into it with his eyes wide open, but I haven't heard definitively whether he will be back. But I think the 49ers are kind of insulated. I'm sure obviously they want Brian Griese back.
Right.
But also, if he isn't back, you know, the Kubiak brothers would have that thing kind of tied down, with Clay more than likely becoming the quarterback's coach and then Clint being the 49ers passing game coordinator. So I think Brian Griese, you know, it's kind of tough to determine a lot of times, like how a position coach is doing. Mm-hmm. But with Brian Griese, it's out there, right?
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
There's no way that he didn't do a good job, just because if you saw the level of preparedness that Brock Purdy had. And I don't necessarily, you know, put all the credit onto Brian Griese for Jimmy Garoppolo, because he's been around a while, but mm-hmm. I think, you know, definitely seeing how Brock Purdy stepped in and just seemed so well prepared and so in the moment and just so comfortable and relaxed. Obviously a lot of that has to do with Brock Purdy and his makeup, but right. also it was pretty clear he had some pretty good coaching behind the scenes.
But I mean, Jimmy Garoppolo said the same thing, you know, because Brian Griese had played the position, it changed how he was coached, and he really liked that style of coaching. And also, I think Brian Griese is prepared mentally. I mean, yes, he hadn't been a coach before, but being a player, at least he knew the level of work that it took to be a positional coach, you know, what it takes, because I mean, you put in all that time as a player. So you should kind of have an idea of what it takes to prepare for an entire NFL season. Of course, I don't think he has ever had to go through the process of coaching three separate starting quarterbacks throughout a season. But all three quarterbacks that we spoke to regularly, you know, Trey Lance, Jimmy Garoppolo, and Brock Purdy, said that because he played the position before, it helped the transition and helped them in their job.
Yeah. And I think with Brian Griese, the thing that he talked about before the season was that he wasn't necessarily focused on, you know, the technical part of it, although I'm sure that was part of it, but right. he was really focused just on the mindset mm-hmm. and, you know, understanding, because he played in the NFL for a number of years, he understands the demands on a quarterback and, you know, kind of looks beyond the actual on-field stuff and kind of mm-hmm. looks at, you know, what tools can he give a quarterback just to take something off their plate so that they can play with a free mind. And I think that showed. I think it showed with Garoppolo right. after that first start he had in Denver, which was a rough one. You know, Garoppolo probably played the best football of his career. And then Brock Purdy stepped in from, you know, the very first snap that he took in that game against the Dolphins and looked ultra prepared.
Right. Right. So yeah, obviously Brian Griese has done his job well in his first year.
Yeah. And so now it's, you know, it's the Trey Lance show, you know, mm-hmm. for the off season.
Right.
You know, we get to like the calendar, but you know, when you look at Brock Purdy, he's going to have that surgery on February 22nd, and we'll mm-hmm. find out a lot about what the time frame is probably later in the day on February 22nd, as far as what they did and then the projected time frame. But you know, this is an opportunity for Trey Lance during the off season, when he's going to be getting all the snaps, to kind of show what kind of improvements he's made. And speaking of quarterbacks coach, he was doing a social media segment with his personal coach, Quincy Avery. And they talked about some things, including the arm fatigue, which we talked about, I think it was last off season. Mm-hmm. And we talked about it. I think Mike Silver was the first one who talked about it publicly. And we talked about how it was a thing. I mean, there was mm-hmm. no question right. that people inside the organization were talking about arm fatigue. And Trey Lance, you know, said as much in this talk, and what he pointed to. And I don't think it was ever a big deal.
Right.
But it's something that was acknowledged. And he mm-hmm. said that a lot of it was because of the rehabbing he was doing and the training, you know, that lost season of 2020 for him mm-hmm. that he basically threw for 20 straight months without any kind of extended break. And that took its toll on him in the training camp of his rookie season. So, you know, I think that now, I don't know how that translates to the stuff he's going to be working on this off season to improve without playing football games. But you know, that's something that, you know, it's a real thing, but it doesn't sound like it's a, you know, anybody's really all that concerned about it because, hey, the more you throw, the more right. your arm's going to get tired.
And, you know, we've talked about it previously on the podcast. You and I spoke to someone very high in the organization who said, yeah, that's something that they're not concerned about, but they just want to monitor. So because of his wind up and his throwing motion, it is a little bit bigger motion, a little bit, not, I wouldn't say less efficient, but it is just a bigger motion. So anytime you have a bigger range of motion, it's going to take more wear and tear on the joints that are involved. So just monitoring it, making sure that he is healthy. And I think that's also says something about, you know, Brock Purdy had 4 seasons as a starter at Iowa State. Trey Lance had 1 season at North Dakota State. So just that Brock Purdy's body, I think, is more used to the rigors of being a starting quarterback, whereas Trey Lance had less experience, less time, you know, on his body. So when you go from only doing 1 season to then going, like you said, 20 something months straight, it's going to take a toll on your body. You do anything. I mean, you know, if you went on a hike 20 months straight every single day,
is that a challenge, Jennifer? Is that a challenge? Because I will do it. You know me, I will do it.
That would take a toll on your body. So, I mean, it's just, you know, being restful. And I think Trey Lance also, he wants to be really good. So that drive and desire to be good, to be a competitor, to be the starting quarterback of the 49ers, he's going to work as hard as possible to do it. And sometimes overwork can be detrimental.
Yeah. And I think also the way that Trey Lance, well, you talked about the way he throws.
Right.
But I'm going to say about the kinds of throws he makes are mm-hmm. more taxing on the arm because, you know, Brock Purdy is typically hitting those short, those intermediate mm-hmm. routes. And when he throws the deep ball, you know, there's maybe more air under it. But when you look at Trey Lance, when he's throwing the football, right. he's putting something on it. So yes. he's throwing with more force, you know, more mm-hmm. more violence, if you will.
Right.
And so he's throwing with more energy and just, you know, putting more effort into it, which takes a greater toll.
Right.
And that's something that I know we had a, you know, talking to like baseball pitchers, you know, why do baseball pitchers experience this injury more mm-hmm. than football players? And a lot of it is that base, you know, when you're pitching baseball, every throw you make is basically high velocity, a lot of effort into it. And that means a lot of torque on the elbow. Whereas football, exactly. you know, you're not throwing that way. I mean, maybe you throw that way 4 times a game, you know, you're mm-hmm. throwing a deep out or something like that. But
right.
I think that Trey Lance maybe throws more along the lines of a baseball pitcher, obviously not anywhere close to that degree, mm-hmm. but more along those lines than say Brock Purdy or other quarterbacks.
And another, I can't remember which quarterback told me at Radio Row last week.
Yeah, come on, Jennifer, you should remember you only talked to like 30,000 people there.
But it might've been Sage Rosenfels who said, you know, because the football is heavier, your arm doesn't whip as much. So you have less likelihood of having that UCL Tommy John injury playing football than you do as a pitcher, because that heavier ball, you can't whip your arm as fast or as hard as you do with a baseball because it's lighter. Changes also the grip of your hand. So all of those things, that's why you don't see that injury in football as much as you do baseball.
So what you're saying is if you're going to whip it good.
Exactly.
Yes. Okay.
Wow, we just dated ourselves.
Yes. Yes, we did. We are Devo.
Yep.
Okay. So we talked about the surgery, February mm-hmm. 22nd. That's a big date that's coming up here.
Also my dad's birthday.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Happy birthday to the maestro.
Yeah.
All right. Same day. Okay. That'll be easy to remember. Oh, you know what? It's my daughter's birthday too.
Is it?
Yes.
And it's Washington's birthday.
Oh, yes, it is. That mm-hmm. would be George Washington.
Yes.
Yes. Yeah. He won't be around to celebrate it though, no. But he lives on. Yeah, February 22nd. Wow, what an incredible day. Okay, so anyway, that'll be easy for all of us to remember now.
Mm-hmm.
And then the next week after that's the NFL Scouting Combine.
Yes.
And then, and we'll be there. And then a couple weeks after that will be the open negotiating period. Mm-hmm. Hey, maybe later on after, oh, by the way, Greg Cosell, he's going to be our guest on this episode of 49ers Talk.
Uh-huh.
So you want to stay tuned for that. And then after Greg, let's talk about 49ers free agents. But those guys, the guys who are scheduled for unrestricted free agency can start negotiating with other teams, mm-hmm. as well as the 49ers can negotiate with free agents from other teams on March 13th. I'm just kind of looking ahead. I don't know that they have anybody that they'd want to franchise. Maybe Robbie Gould, but yeah. I don't know. He suggested that he did not think he was going to get franchised. And maybe that's wishful thinking because he doesn't want to be franchised. Right. But kind of the next, the bigger thing or the one thing, May 1st is the deadline for teams to exercise the fifth year option on players. Those are first round picks of the 2020 draft. And that would be for the 2024 season.
Right.
And that's fully guaranteed. And I look at this. Okay. I don't see any way that they use the fifth year option on Javon Kinlaw.
Mm-hmm.
It would be basically $10.5 million. And then Brandon Ayuk is interesting because he's, because of like 75% playing time,
mm-hmm.
he would be making $14 million. That's a lot of money, especially when you have that much money devoted to Deebo Samuel. Mm-hmm. So I think that when you look at this offseason, I think it would behoove the 49ers to see if they can't work out a long-term deal with Brandon Ayuk this offseason.
Uh-huh.
Just like they're going to be working out something, they hope anyway, with Nick Bosa this offseason.
The 49ers front office does a really good job. You look at how they worked out the deal for Dre Greenlaw at the beginning of the season. If they waited till the end of the season, he would have been so much more expensive. He had such a good season. I mean, right up there stat-wise with Fred Warner, and his coverage skills have gotten so much better. I think they got themselves a bargain with what they signed Dre Greenlaw to. And if, you know, this is the time where they could do it with Brandon Ayuk, same situation, because I have a feeling that the more Brandon Ayuk plays, the better he's going to get. Yeah. And the price just goes up.
Yeah. And I mean, the price is going up on Deebo Samuel. I know there mm-hmm. was a report this last week that the Patriots were kind of sniffing around to see if Deebo Samuel were available. I mean, I would have thought that if any team, you know, was interested last year would have been mm-hmm. the year, because he was on the market, you know, or at least the 49ers were listening to teams, not that they wouldn't listen to any team at any time for any player. But when you think about, you know, what the New York Jets offered the 49ers for Deebo Samuel, it wasn't anywhere near where the 49ers were looking. So, We'll see what happens there. But yeah, I think Kinlaw will not get mm-hmm. franchise or not franchise. It's the fifth year option. Yeah, right. Kinlaw will not get that. But Ayuk might, but mm-hmm. I think the better option for the 49ers is assign him to a long-term deal.
Right.
Because that way you can kind of spread out that, you know, the guaranteed mm-hmm. money and lessen the cap hit.
I don't think Deebo wants to go anywhere. I think he's happy right now. He posted on his social media, he's down in Cabo with George Kittle and Claire Kittle, Christian McCaffrey and Olivia Culpo, and Kyle Juszczyk and his wife, Kristen Juszczyk. So
wow,
all,
how about you? You're just all over this.
They are all in Cabo having a great time. And Deebo's little caption on his Instagram story was, "Love these guys." So,
Wow. Yeah,
I don't think Deebo really wants to go anywhere. Obviously, if they traded him, he wouldn't have any choice. But it seems like whatever was giving him angst before or irking him during the offseason is not irking him anymore.
That's, you know what? And there was a point in the during the season where he just looked so happy.
Mm-hmm.
He was so happy with him. And I remember asking John Lynch, like, in retrospect, it just seemed crazy, right? That there was something going on and he requested a trade, when it just seems like everything points to Debo being, you know, maybe not the perfect, that's hyperbole a little bit, mm-hmm. but let's go ahead and use the word.
Sure.
It just looked like Debo was the perfect player for the 49ers, and the 49ers were the perfect team for Debo.
Mm-hmm.
And all that, not just the style of play, but the people around him and everything else.
I mean, you saw the shift in practice where he was dancing around, always happy, joking around with everybody. So, I mean, like, he looks like he's happy where he's at. So, I think he'd be very upset if they ended up trading him at this point.
Yeah. Well, you know what makes me happy? Talking to Greg Cosell. And let's do that right after this word from Big O Tires.
Did you know that the warranty from a tire manufacturer could be voided if your car is out of alignment? At Big O Tires, we install and maintain every tire we sell and offer critical services like alignments. Here at Big O, everything we do is to protect you and your car. Big O Tires, the team you trust.
Hey, Greg Cosell joins us now at Radio Row, presented by your local Toyota dealers. Greg Cosell, the guru of film, NFL films. You break down quarterbacks. You break down play like nobody else. And so we have some quarterbacks to talk to you about today.
You do, huh?
Can you think of maybe number one on the list?
I can't imagine.
Well, let's go.
I saw Joe Montana. He was here. Do you want to talk about him?
Break him down. Okay, yeah. How much does Brock Purdy remind you of Joe Montana? How's that for a...
Wow. You know, Brock Purdy, I was just talking about this with someone, you know, just here on Radio Row, that there's some quarterbacks, I think, that are going to cause people to think a little differently in terms of evaluation, which is a good thing, including myself. Josh Allen was one of those guys, because you may remember when he came out, and obviously he's from California, and he went to Wyoming, and while he was big and strong and could throw it hard and could run around, he was scattershot and inaccurate, and you know, when the Bills traded up to get him, there were a lot of people who thought, boy, that, you know, Josh Allen's not going to be any good, and he's turned out okay. And I can tell you for a fact that Brock Purdy, there were teams in this league that didn't even have Brock Purdy as a priority free agent. You know, so it's, and again, there's so many factors here, and you guys, you know, when you talk about players, and because of social media now, which can be wonderful and can also be a cesspool, as we all know, is if you say something that doesn't make it sound like Brock Purdy is great, people think you don't like Brock Purdy. But Brock Purdy has a certain skill set and a coach in Kyle Shanahan that really understands how to get quarterbacks to be highly efficient. And Brock Purdy ultimately is that kind of player. He's not a big arm kid. He's not physically imposing. Now, there were two things that he could do that Jimmy Garoppolo couldn't do. One was he's much lighter, quicker feet. So you saw much more play action boot because he's able to do that. Jimmy G could not really do that well. And the second thing was Purdy has second reaction movement. He can make improvisational plays. We know that Jimmy G really was not that guy. So it expanded what the 49ers could do, but the pass game as a whole is a very defined systemic pass game, where the throws are presented based on use of personnel, formations. I mean, there's no team in the league that is as diverse formationally with 21 personnel, two backs, one being Juszczyk, of course, a tight end and two wide receivers, as the 49ers. And that poses a lot of problems for defenses in how they line up. So, you know, throws are clearly defined. And again, people see this as a knock on Purdy, but I kind of believe that it's the coach's job to do those kinds of things, to really, you know, present the quarterback with clear, defined reads and throws.
Now, there is a little bit of a question with Kyle Shanahan calling play action because his quarterbacks were hurt this year.
Right.
Can you discuss why play action is so important and how it's not a play that necessarily is set up for a quarterback to easily get injured?
Well, there's two types of play action. There's play action with the quarterback under center, which I call conventional play action, and there's play action with the quarterback in the gun. I personally believe that play action with the quarterback under center is much more effective for this reason. What are you trying to... Well, there's a couple of things you're trying to accomplish with play action. But one of the things you're trying to accomplish is to have second-level defenders, linebackers. They're going to be a safety, you know, as a second-level defender. You're trying to get them. It's not a matter of having them run up into the line of scrimmage. If they're playing zone, you're just trying to prevent them from reacting quickly to their zone drop responsibility. So why is conventional play action, in my view, better? Because it takes longer to get to the mesh point. So they have to wait to see, especially if your run game and your pass game with play action look similar, which has been a Shanahan staple forever, is they look very similar. You'll hear defensive players say that all the time. I remember having this conversation with Navarro Bowman when Shanahan became the coach, because I was out there doing the preview film. I actually interviewed him, and he said that, you know, as a defensive player, it's so hard when that run action looks the same as a pass because you don't know what it is. So when the mesh point takes longer to get to, because obviously when you're in the gun, very often it's much more of a quick fake, and then second-level defenders can get to their pass coverage responsibility. So conventional play action tends to put second-level defenders in conflict. It takes them longer. And I think that's one of the strengths of Kyle Shanahan, and I think that's one reason why conventional play action can be really, really effective.
Can you talk to that in relation to that play in which Brock Purdy got in?
Oh, I mean, that's a play, first of all, every team, that was a shot play, and every team has tight ends block pass rushers. That's not uncommon. Now, because the result of that play was obviously not only a negative in terms of a sack or whatever it was, but a potential loss of an entire season for Brock Purdy. We don't know how all that's going to play out, but something's going to play out that's not going to be good. That's easy to rip. You know, can you sit here and say as an abstraction that you don't want Tyler Kroft blocking Hassan Reddick? Yes, of course you can. And I get that, and that's fine. You know, it's hard to argue just as kind of a mathematical equation. 2 and 2 is 4. Should Kraft be blocking Hassan Reddick on a deep drop? No. But that's not – Shanahan's not the only guy that's done that. I see it on tape every week, and it works. I don't know what else to – and I'm being honest, I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah.
You know, it didn't work.
Yeah.
So it looks really bad. You know, but it's not because Kyle Shanahan is stupid.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I want to ask you about something else that didn't work. You talked about Brock Purdy.
Right.
Have you – and I don't know how much you
– I did him coming out.
You did him.
Yeah.
Okay. And I would assume you didn't have him as a first or second round draft.
No, I did not.
Okay. Is that something that you would then go back and say, I mean, did you miss anything? Did talent evaluators miss anything with Brock Purdy coming out last year in the 2022 NFL draft?
That gets to what I was kind of saying at the beginning about making people rethink evaluations.
Yes.
Because, first of all, Brock Purdy was benched twice at Iowa State. Okay, so Brock Purdy he had a really good sophomore year, and there were a lot of people after that sophomore year, and I watched that tape, by the way, and I liked him then, but I didn't think he was a top 50 pick after his sophomore year. Brock Purdy is not, I guess I'd answer it this way. If you were talking to coaches, offensive coaches, and you said, make a list of your top 15 quarterback traits, they probably all have the same 15 traits. Then the question becomes, what value does a particular coach ascribe to those traits? And you'd start to get different answers. My guess is Kyle Shanahan might ascribe different value to quarterback traits than Brian Daboll. Or, you know, another, you know, I'm just, that name just popped into my head. You know, then, you know, I would bet Bill Walsh would ascribe different value to quarterback traits as opposed to Mike Martz. You know, it comes down to...
And some of those traits aren't measurable, right? Are you talking about processing?
No, I'm talking about what shows up on film.
Okay.
Because all I can speak about is what I do. I don't get to, you know, rarely do I get to sit down and really, you know, do that kind of work with quarterbacks. So those, I guess I'd answer it this way. Every trait eventually gets manifested on the field. You know, a guy is not a great quarterback because he takes his offensive lineman out to dinner on Thursday night. That's nice, and that builds a certain camaraderie, and there's no question that's helpful, you know, in terms of just the general dynamic. But that's not what allows a guy to make a big-time throw on third and nine in the fourth quarter, because he takes his offensive lineman out to dinner on Thursday night, or because he gets them Rolex watches in the offseason. Ultimately, everything gets manifested in how you play. Like Brock Purdy, for instance, there were two things he started to do in the last 2-3 weeks of the season, which if he were, we don't know what would have played out against the Eagles, and we don't know when he's going to play again, but he started to do two things that would have to be cleaned up. Number one, when he felt pressure, he started to retreat backwards. You can't retreat backwards in the NFL. And the other thing is, when he felt pressure, he would automatically run to his left. And teams would start to force him. I'm telling you right now, teams, if he wasn't hurt and all that, teams would start to force him to do that. You know, because you see how a guy plays over time. You get a book on him. You know, and there's no question Brock Purdy played better than Nick Mullins, but let's not remember that Nick Mullins threw for a lot of yards under Kyle Shanahan. You know, so, I mean, Mullins threw far more picks than Purdy. Purdy, one of the great things about Purdy was that he did not make what you'd call bad throws. Could he have thrown a few more picks? Obviously, Diggs dropped the interception at the end of the first half in that game against Seattle, which was only he could tell you why he threw that. I couldn't, because he threw it right to Diggs. But he also started to miss a few things the last 2 weeks, where they were designed to fine read throws, and for whatever reason, he didn't turn it loose. He just, I don't know, maybe he didn't see. I can't answer that. Only he could. So I'm not saying that he did not have a good year, and the story is phenomenal, but 6-7 games is not enough to decide that a guy is either bad, you know, in some cases, or great, as in, you know, I mean, I remember after Brock Purdy's first game against Miami, when he came in, and by the way, played exceptionally well against a really hard defense to play against, then I got asked by out in San Francisco, you know, I do twice a week on KNBR, you know, what his evaluation was, what my evaluation was, and what I knew other people's were, and all of a sudden on Twitter, people saying, well, you have to apologize to Brock Purdy. The guy had played one game. He was great. And he played against a tough team that blitzed a lot, and he read all that stuff and made great throws. But, I mean, let's be realistic here. 6 or 7 games is not enough in any way to evaluate a player, good or bad.
Okay. All right, a guy who has even less film, Trey Lance.
Yeah.
I mean, what can you say about him, and what if because Brock Purdy is hurt, he ends up being the guy who's the number one spot?
I would struggle to give a true evaluation of him based on the amount that he's played. You know, I guess the question I would have with Lance, and this is more a gut reaction than this is exactly what the film shows, because I don't know if there's truly enough film, but the question I would have is, I'm anxious to see if he just sees it quickly enough. And there are coaches who think you can, you know, coach that, and there's other coaches who will tell you that, hey, if a guy doesn't see it real well, that just may be the way he is. So I don't know the answer to that.
And define seeing it real well.
I mean, as you guys know, every play call, pass play, has a route progression, has a concept with a progression based on an anticipated defense. Because calls are not made in a vacuum. Game plans are built on, we're playing against this defense, here's how I want to attack it. So you make a play call, sometimes you get what you anticipated, sometimes you don't. Defensive coaches coach too. So the quarterback, there's a difference between predetermination and anticipation. A lot of times, the phrase we use is with quarterbacks is that, hey, they're throwing that ball out of the huddle. That's predetermination. Here's the play call. Matt Miyako's my primary read. I'm throwing it to him. You know, it doesn't mean, you know, I'm throwing it to him. And sometimes that's good, sometimes it's bad. If you get the defense you anticipate, it might be really good. If there's a little difference in the defense, it might be bad. So that's when the quarterback has to, you know, drop back and on his first or second step. The term I use is elimination and isolation as opposed to processing. You have to eliminate what's not there and isolate where to go within the structure and timing of the play call. I wonder, that's just a question I have about Lance. Again, not based on the fact that I've seen that he's been bad at it, but I'm very curious to see him do that as, he progresses.
And, I mean, you know Kyle Shanahan's system pretty well.
Yep.
You don't know as much about Trey Lance probably even than you know about Brock Purdy.
Probably not.
Can you tell?
But like, they know about Trey Lance. That's the thing.
Okay.
They know about Trey Lance. So, because I can tell you right now, yeah, does he have to play more games under fire? Sure. And they'll learn more things then. But I bet that if you got Kyle Shanahan with truth serum and he was talking to you guys, they know a lot about Trey, far more than I do.
Right. So can you tell, is Brock Purdy a better fit, do you think, for what Kyle Shanahan historically has done or what he wants to do?
Well, then you get into those traits, because Lance has a bigger arm. Lance is more mobile. Does that automatically mean he's a better quarterback? No. But he does have those things over Brock Purdy. Maybe Purdy is a better eliminator and isolator. We don't know that yet. Purdy, for the most part, did that well later in the season, not as well as he did through the first four or five games.
Why would you think that would be?
I can't answer that. You know, that's when you start getting into the meetings and the process.
It's counterintuitive.
It is counterintuitive. You would think that the more he played, but he missed throw. I mean, I work with guy who works with me on the matchup show, Kevin Foley. His brother Glenn played in the league. You know, Kevin was actually a really big-time recruit coming out of South New Jersey. He's a football guy, you know, and he was sitting there watching tape. You know, we all watch tape kind of separately in our matchup room, and he would come into my area and say, I'm watching Purdy. These throws are there. Kyle must be going nuts because the throws were there, and he wasn't throwing it. I can't tell you why, to quote the Eagles. Not the football team, the band.
But that was a long run to get there.
Yeah, there you go. I like that. You know, so when a quarterback doesn't make throws that are there, I can't answer that. But that's one thing there's no metric for. You know, I've been doing this a long time, and I know what the route concepts are, and I know what, you know, against coverage is. So when a throw is there to be made and it's not made, there's no metric for that. You know, there's no metric for throws that should be made that aren't. And I can't answer why he didn't turn it loose on some throws in, let's totally discount the Eagles game. You know, he didn't play that many snaps. But the two previous games, there were some throws that he left on the field that were there, that were designed. And you know how much of a designer Kyle is. I mean, he runs his offense.
Looking at, you know, what Kyle Shanahan can do, how hard is it for him to put together an offensive plan, let's say, to have both quarterbacks be used in the same game?
I'm not as smart as Kyle, but I'm not a believer in that.
Why?
I think that the quarterback is there's a major feel element to playing quarterback, getting into the flow of a game, understanding what you're seeing from the defense, getting a feel for all situations, taking every snap. I mean, it's one thing, I guess the way I'd answer that is this. It's one thing, let's say Brock Purdy was the starter, just for the sake of this discussion, and you get down to, you know, the goal line, and it's second and goal from the two. Maybe that, you know, there's a Trey Lance concept there because of the movement. But I'm not a believer in doing that throughout the course of the game. That's just me. It doesn't make me right. I'm just not a believer in that.
Yeah. We know you have to go, but I have a...
We have a
Jimmy Garoppolo question.
Yep.
And I know you don't do lists. You don't rank these guys.
No.
But when you watch Garoppolo film, I would assume that there's a lot there to like, and there's probably a lot there maybe not to like. So would you expect that he would find, without much question, a starting job?
Well,
in the NFL?
Talked to coaches about Garoppolo, because it appeared last year he was not going to be a Niner either. Mm-hmm. There's no mystery to Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy Garoppolo, for want of a better term, is a system player. He's a pure timing and rhythm player. The longer he's in the pocket, the less effective he is. What he does exceptionally well, which is demanded in Kyle's offense, and he's not given enough credit for this, is to make throws between the numbers. Those are hard throws. There's a lot of bodies there, okay? Those are hard throws. He turns those balls loose without a problem. Mm. Every once in a while, he sticks it on a defender and people go, oh my God, he stinks. But those are hard throws. I'm telling you right now, those are not easy. I mean, I remember when Kevin O'Connell, the coach of the Vikings, years ago when he got out of the NFL, he wanted to be in broadcasting initially, and he came into our broadcast boot camp, and he and I really hit it off. And I know Kevin. And during lulls in the boot camp, he would say, hey, can we go into your office and watch film? And I remember him telling me, you know, when I came out of San Diego State, he was a third-round pick of the Patriots. He said, because he was in a spread offense, he said, man, making throws in the NFL in the middle of the field, it looked to me like there were 15 defenders out there. You know, those throws are hard. Jimmy G does not get enough credit for those throws, but he's not a second reaction movement guy. He's not really a late in the down pocket guy. He gets, you know, you see the way he starts to get a little antsy. You know, that's not his game. His game, it has to be rhythm and timing. The ball has to come out. So therefore, he needs what he had with the Niners, a run game. He needs good defense. You know, he needs all those things. And this is what coaches say when they talk about Jimmy G. You can line up and play with Jimmy G. He was in a Super Bowl. He was in two NFC Championship games. I mean, you can line up and play with him, but you need to know what he is, and everybody does.
And off the top of your head, is there a system or a team that he kind of lines up with that you would go, oh, I could definitely see him playing for this team next season? I mean, I think, like, you know, Vegas with Josh McDaniels. You got, you know, Robert Saleh.
Jets, yeah.
You know, the Jets. What are some of the other?
Maybe Carolina, maybe Indianapolis.
I mean, he could probably play with any of those teams.
Yeah.
It's just Houston probably is not as does not have enough talent for him right now.
Okay.
He'd have to, you know,
right.
He'd have to make too many plays. And Davis Mills got stuck in that. I mean, is Davis Mills, you know, Patrick Mahomes? Of course not. But I personally think Davis Mills has ability. He's, you know, he's just on a team that has very, very little talent, and he's not that guy,
right.
You know, but there's not 20 transcendent quarterbacks. You know, you still got to line up and play. You know, that's why I love when people say, like, the Giants, like Daniel Jones, the report is, you know, he's looking for $35 million. You know, I don't get into the money. And a lot of people say, oh, let him walk. Well, that's great. Who's going to play quarterback?
Yeah.
I mean, you know, you still got to line up with guys.
Yeah, 49ers found out what happens when you don't have a quarterback who can throw in the NFC Championship game.
Correct.
It's not pretty.
No, it's not.
Yeah.
And they don't fall out of the sky.
Yeah.
You know, and there's not 20 Patrick Mahomes, Josh Allens, Joe Burrows. So you got to line up and play.
Yeah. So, Greg Cosell, this is 2 years in a row. You've landed at the Super Bowl. Your first stop was here with us. We're going to go ahead and pencil you in. Next year, I believe, is Las Vegas.
Las Vegas.
As soon as your plane lands, we expect you here about 90 minutes later. Is that
okay?
Cool?
Hey.
Okay, Greg
that'll
Cosell,
work.
All right. NFL Films, thank you so much.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
Okay, I love talking to Greg Cosell. He knows his stuff. He watches more film than...
He was mad at me, though. I didn't have donuts for him this year.
Oh, my gosh. Okay. Last year... In LA, you brought in, where are the donuts from?
Sidecar.
Sidecar. And that's a well-known donut place, is it?
It's adult donuts. So
what does that mean? Oh, that sounds naughty.
Well, they're not like, they're a little bit more, I don't know that, I mean, I'm sure kids like them, but you know, there's a little bit.
Are we gonna have to put a mature audience? Like warning on this podcast because you're talking about mature. Was it adult donuts?
Adult donuts. They're adult flavors. So, it's an acquired taste for some of them, but the ones, the donuts that I brought to Radio Row last year, they're butter and salt. So there's a little bit of butter, a little bit of salt. And so there's a sweet and salt element to
okay.
it.
Okay. Sweet and savory, I believe is the
yes.
way we term that.
Yes.
Yeah. So last year you brought in the donuts and Greg saw those donuts. And I mean, he moved so quickly and he took one bite out of the donut and then we started filming and he put this half-eaten donut down in front of him. And I noticed he kept losing concentration because that donut was just staring him in the face. But this year he agreed to talk to us and there wasn't even the incentive of having a donut.
I know, such a nice guy. Yeah. And his film analysis is really good. I mean, granted, I think, you know, there's something to be said that we don't know what the plays are. So sometimes we think a player is making a mistake. It maybe not be that player. It might be, you know, another element to the play. So we don't always know what's supposed to happen. I think one of the biggest times that was kind of outed was when Brian Baldinger was saying, Javon Kinlaw was just getting tossed. Eric Armstead came in on social media and said, hey, that was my fault. I should have been in that gap. So while, you know, we all love what Greg Cosell does, granted, there are sometimes mistakes, so we have to, you know, just say we don't know everything that's supposed to happen in a play, but he does great film analysis.
Yeah, no, I think Greg, if Greg doesn't know, he'll say it. Mm-hmm. That's what, right. I like about Greg. And also, Greg has enough context of years and years and years of film study, and he knows offenses around the league. So he can, he can make a pretty educated guess because he's mm-hmm. seen those plays before. He knows the design. He knows the intent of the play. So that's why I like him so much.
Right.
And also because he's a great guy.
He knows the coach's tendencies. So he already knows what Kyle Shanahan's tendencies are in calling plays.
Yes. And so what he said, and I guess he kind of pumped the brakes more than most of us, but he says it's just he hasn't seen enough of Brock Purdy to determine, you know, what kind of quarterback he is. Mm-hmm. And I, you know, I think that's fair. I mean, yeah. You and I mean, I think we both agree, and we've said it, that we think Brock Purdy is pretty darn good, and yeah. he proved it. But mm-hmm. you know, until I guess you see how, well, first off with him, you know, once we'll have to see how he responds to that elbow surgery.
Right.
And then I guess the bigger thing after that would be to see how teams defend him in the future. Mm-hmm. In other words,
tape on him now.
Yeah. And I mean, teams had tape on him last season, but it's in the context of, okay, we've seen a couple of games. We have to put together a defensive game plan in 2 days, you know, whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. But I just wonder if, you know, once, and who was it? I think George Kittle, 2 days after the season, said that teams are going to try to make Brock Purdy not be Brock Purdy. Mm-hmm. You know, and that's a compliment because right. Brock Purdy is code for being a really good quarterback in the way that George Kittle was saying. So it's a fascinating thing. Everywhere I go, anybody who wants to talk 49ers, the first thing they say is, what's going on at the quarterback position? You know, what's Trey Lance all about? What's Brock Purdy all about? Is Brock Purdy going to be healthy? Is Trey Lance going to be healthy? Does Trey Lance have what it takes? And I mean, it's just a fascinating thing because
it's a never-ending conversation. It seems like, you know, as long as we've been doing these podcasts, it seems like there's always some element to the quarterback's room that is like kind of unknown. What's going to happen? Who's going to be the starting quarterback, at least since Trey Lance was drafted by the 49ers. So yeah, it's been really interesting.
Yeah. Okay. So the 49ers mentioned March 13th is when basically free agency starts, mm-hmm. that's when teams can start negotiating with players who aren't on their team. And, you know, I guess the number one guy who's going to get the biggest contract is Jimmy Garoppolo.
Yeah.
And I think the first shoe to drop, is that right? Is that the right term?
Yep. Yep.
Yeah. The
chip
first
to
shoe,
fall. Yeah. Chip to well, fall or a shoe to drop, either
there
or.
There we go. The first thing that will happen in this quarterback dominoes will be Derek Carr, because the Raiders released him. He's mm-hmm. officially a free agent. He does not have to wait until March 13th because the Raiders released him. So he's not one of their free agents. He is a free agent. And so he's taken some visits and kind of decide. But if he ends up with the Jets, you know, there goes the Jets as a possible landing spot for Jimmy Garoppolo. But, mm-hmm. you know, as Kyle Shanahan said, he sees no scenario in which Jimmy Garoppolo is back. And I think that I, you know, unlike a year ago, well, I guess I didn't really see any scenario a year ago other than the fact that he remained under contract to the 49ers, which mm-hmm. was obviously the telling part of all this. And so it'll be interesting. I mean, that'll be one of the top kind of newsmakers of this offseason is right. which team signs Jimmy Garoppolo.
There's also Aaron Rodgers coming out of his dark house. So that is another decision that needs to be made.
This is Pleasant Valley High School. I was just at Pleasant Valley High School in Chico on Friday night. That is Aaron Rodgers High School.
There you go.
Yeah.
So yeah, his decision also will affect the quarterback carousel, who's going to go where, because if he does stay with the Green Bay Packers, then that's a spot that is not going to be open. If he decides to leave or he wants to retire, then that's another spot. You know, Jimmy Garoppolo could head to the Packers, which would not be a bad situation for him either.
Okay, I got a question for you. Is he yanking our chain? Is this dark retreat really a thing? Or is he just making us all look like fools by taking that seriously?
You never know with him. Yeah. I think we've watched, you know, him go through several off seasons where he doesn't know what exactly he wants to do. And I think, was it last year he did ayahuasca?
Excuse me?
Yeah, exactly. Nice. So bless you.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah. So, you know, your guess is as good as mine, but he needs to make a decision on whether he's going to come back or not. And I think he might be the first chip to fall as opposed to Derek Carr.
Oh, really? No.
Or about maybe, yeah. Yeah. But he's one of the bigger ones.
But I think his situation will be determined pretty early. Yeah, it'll be.
Maybe.
Yeah.
He likes to drag things out. Who knows?
Speaking of dark retreats.
Yes.
Have you heard about this room that's like the quietest room ever? Like I forget where it is, but there's this quiet.
And that's not where Aaron Rodgers is?
No.
Okay.
There's this room, and somebody out there will know. I'll look it up. But apparently it is so quiet that you can only stay in this room for like an hour because it is so quiet. You start hearing your own heartbeat and your breathing, and you hear like your inner organs, like that's how quiet it is. And if you can't stay in there for more than an hour, or you'll just zone out. I have no idea what. Oh, that dark retreat. Yeah, it seems to me like dark retreat would be kind of like that. Like I don't
too much sensory deprivation.
I think so. Okay. Moving right
along.
Well,
we don't have sensory deprivation here.
No. Oh, yeah. Well, actually we might after this. Okay. So the next guy, I think, is Mike McGlinchey. Like he's going to get a big time contract. He's going to get like $15 million a year or something like that. Mm-hmm. And I don't see the 49ers paying that for him. And I think it's time. I think they want to see, or I think, put it this way. I think the trade-off in going from McGlinchey to either Colton McKivitz or Jalen Moore, I don't know that they lose enough to justify paying McGlinchey that huge contract when they already have so many high price guys on the team.
Yeah, you kind of have to make a decision at some point, like, where are you going to spend the money because you only have so much? So, you know, I think it's going to surprise a lot of 49ers fans how much Mike McGlinchey gets paid.
It shouldn't, because we've told them.
I know. But I'm just saying, I think there's going to be a lot of 49ers fans are like, what? He's making that much money? Because he's really good at his job. And granted, yes, I know. The thing about offensive linemen, right? You only have your name called when you're making the mistake. Mm-hmm. Or when you let your quarterback get sacked or something happens. So you think about how many snaps they're out there. I mean, they're on the field every single offensive snap. So if you only are called once a game or twice a game, that's a lot of times where you don't get called. So Mike McGlinchey is a good player. I don't, you know.
That's the way I'd say it. I think Mike McGlinchey is a good player. Mm-hmm. You know, and I think that, you know, is he a perfect player? Obviously not.
No.
But I think that what people lose sight of is there's a lot of teams in the NFL that have really bad offensive lines. Mm-hmm. And the 49ers did not have a really bad offensive line. They had, you know, one of the better offensive lines in football. Mm-hmm. And I think that with all the teams that are running some form of Shanahan system with the zone running and, you know, the zone blocking and all that, I think McGlinchey is seen by probably half the teams in the league, at least, as just kind of plug and play. Like, there he is. He can, we know he can do this. Let's go get him and upgrade right tackle.
And you look at his run blocking. His run blocking is really good. He's much better run blocker than he is a pass protector. And you see him get out in front of those guys, in front of the running back, whoever the ball carrier is. He's mobile that way. And he's a little stiffer in the hips for pass protection, but the fact that he's mobile and can get out in front of a ball carrier is, you know, that's a great quality for your right tackle.
Yeah, I think there are two things working against him as far as public perception. One is that he was selected number 9 overall in the draft. Mm-hmm. And if you're to redraft that draft, he would not be number 9 overall. The other thing is he's always compared to the guy on the other side, Trent Williams, and that's an unfair comparison for anybody. So I think Mike McGlinchey's going to cash in. Okay, a few defensive guys. Jimmy Ward, Samson Ebukam, Azeez Alshire, Emmanuel Mosley. Those guys are all Tashawn Gibson too. And then, I mean, there's all the defensive linemen. Jimmy Ward's an interesting one because if they don't re-sign him, then they're in a little bit of a bind. If they don't re-sign him, I think they either sign Jimmy Ward or Emmanuel Mosley. Because then if they re-sign Mosley, then D'Amador Lenore plays nickel.
We know Jimmy Ward's not going to play nickel again. I don't think he's going to want to do that again. I think he really wants to go back to playing safety.
Okay, so would he play safety with the 49ers? Like, would they, or will he, I mean, that's the thing. Like, and you talked to Tashawn Gibson right after the season. He was uncertain whether he wanted to
come back. Right.
So what do you do there if you're the 49ers?
If Tashawn Gibson says he's going to retire and he's not going to play anymore, then maybe you go after Jimmy Ward to keep him on the team. Maybe it's a, you know, a 1-year deal or a 2-year deal. Now, Jimmy Ward is playing really good ball. He's obviously proved his versatility in so many different positions. I think he really wants to play just his regular safety role. I think he spoke about it repeatedly throughout the season about how he wanted to stay at safety.
And after the season.
Yes. But does he want to stay with the 49ers? You know, he's also been in the league quite a long time. He's kind of at the twilight of his career, even though he's playing his best ball. But when, you know, when franchises look at giving guys a multi-year deal, their age is taken into consideration. And he is not, you know, one of the young guys on the roster anymore. Very, you know, versatile, very good at his job. But, you know, when you get to a certain point, where's the tipping point where you start to decline in your play? So.
Yeah. Yeah,
and not saying that he is. Not saying that he is.
And if you're a team, and you know Parag's a smart guy, you're paying guys not for what they've done in the past,
right?
But for what you think they're going to do in the future.
Exactly.
The one thing that I would think of would be, you know, D'Amico Ryans might want Jimmy Ward to come in there and kind of be a leader and show the other guys the defense. Mm-hmm. However, if you're Jimmy Ward, are you saying D'Amico Ryans is the guy who demoted me from starting free safety and made me a nickelback? So we don't know where that all shakes out. Emmanuel Mosley, to me, you've heard me say this. I'm a big Emmanuel Mosley fan. I think he's a really good player. I feel so bad for him that injury happened when he was going to get a big contract, and he still might. But it's kind of funny too, because D'Amador Lenore played very well down the stretch, particularly in the playoffs. But 49ers are a better team when Emmanuel Mosley's on it.
And it's one of those things, you know, will he want to just do a 1-year prove it deal? Because he is coming off a significant injury. He was, you know, down on the field. He looked like he was getting healthier. He told me when he was on the field during the NFC Championship game, everything's going on schedule, feeling good. But you never know until you get into a game, until a guy gets into a game with that ACL, how are they going to react? And you watched Jimmy Garoppolo when he came back from his ACL injury, when a guy was coming at him low, he got a little nervous. You could see him kind of step back in the pocket. So how much confidence do you have in your knee, especially from the beginning of your return from a significant injury like that? Will he do a 1-year prove it deal? So that's a possibility that he could stay with the Niners.
Maybe there's a team that's going to take a chance and just say, hey, you know, we want you and we're going to pay you like what we would have paid you had you not gotten injured. Samson Ebukam is an interesting guy because I think there's more there. Like they need to get more production out of that other D defensive end spot, that other edge position, yeah, opposite of Nick Bosa. And so, I don't know. I think a lot is on the plate of Drake Jackson. They need him to be, you know, a guy who's approaching double digit sacks. They, you know, and Kyle Shanahan laid it out very succinctly. He needs to get stronger. He needs to show more power. He needs to maintain his power throughout the season. So this is a huge offseason for him
yes.
to put in that work. And
I mean, you look at how complimentary Nick Bosa was of Drake Jackson. He's got so much bend. He's incredibly athletic. He can get around a tackle really well, and he's able to have that, you know, an angle where he's gets around a guy and still not fall over and stay upright. So, I mean, he's got a lot of athleticism. It's just putting it to use, and that and being able to play a full season, because the NFL season is so much longer than a college season.
You know, last time I was in Indianapolis, mm-hmm. good story, I took a lap around the Indianapolis Motor Speedway.
Uh-huh.
There's a point here.
Okay.
When you watch Nick Bosa, like the way he bends the corner, you know, the banks at the Indianapolis Motor Speedway are, nice. I don't even know, it's a lot of degrees. It's like, you know, because of the speed those cars are going.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the way Nick Bosa looks like. It looks like he's going around a banked turn because of the speed he's able to do. And that's the point that he was making about Drake Jackson, right? That he can bend the corner and contort his body, but it's the other part of it. It's the power that, that Drake Jackson has to.
And Nick Bosa said that Drake Jackson does things as a rookie that Nick Bosa had to work on to be able to get there. So he's like, at the beginning of the season, I remember him saying, he's like, yeah, he does stuff that I couldn't do as a rookie. Oh. And I think also just, he's a little, I don't know if not looser is the word, but he's more flexible. I think Nick Bosa's had to work at it, but he was incredibly complimentary of what Drake Jackson's physical talents were.
All that said, he was inactive for a lot of the games down the stretch. So they need more from him. Yes. I think Aziz Alshire is going to get a nice contract, and he'll be a starter for some other team. Mm-hmm. From a long time ago, it looked like whenever you had Fred Warner, Dre Greenlaw, Aziz Alshire, you weren't going to be able to keep all three of those guys on second contracts. Well, they gave Fred Warner a huge deal. They gave Dre Greenlaw a very nice deal. And more than likely, Aziz Alshire will be leaving. That's probably, we can save some of these for our next podcast, because I know we've been going at this for a while now, but when's our next podcast will be dropping later this week. And I guess that'll be the final one before the scouting combine. But that's where we are on the NFL calendar.
Crazy. I know people are always like, oh, now that the season's over, you get a break, right? I'm like, no, the combine's in 2 weeks. Yeah. It's never ending.
Right. What do you do in the off season? I'll tell you what we do. This.
Yes, more podcasts.